Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. The Able Trust, believing growth of Florida's economy depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust works with the business community to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital team members. More information is at abletrust.org. From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Florida environmentalists are fuming over plans to build three new toll roads in the state.
I can't really think of a much worse bill than in my entire time in politics.
Also this week, the state's environmentalists are disappointed in general with this year's lawmaking session.
It's why the engagement of young people is so important on this work. It's why you have to have the public outcry, because unless my colleagues and leadership feel that pressure, they're never going to move on it.
We'll also find out what new laws are in place to fight human trafficking in Florida and discover that new federal tariffs intended to boost American business are posing an existential threat to Florida agriculture, especially the state's blueberry farmers. I'm Tom Flanagan, and this is Capitol Report. Governor Ron DeSantis has approved a measure that could pave the way for the state's first major highway expansion in decades. The effort has been led by State Senate President Bill Galvano, who pushed the roads as a way to aid in evacuations, promote growth in rural areas of the state, and help transport an ever-growing population. But environmentalists argue the idea could be a disaster for fragile ecosystems. Lynn Hatter has more.
A recent protest drew about 24 people to the Tri-Rail station in Hollywood. Sue Caruso with the Sierra Club spoke with public radio station WLRN in Miami.
There's no way they're not going to disrupt some of the last remaining natural areas, disturbing habitats, and human resources.
The Sierra Club is among some 90 environmental organizations that lobbied Governor Ron DeSantis to veto the measure that would lead to three new highways in the state. Jonathan Weber with Florida Conservation Voters has called the plan a disaster.
These highways will go through some of the most pristine and rural lands that we have left in Florida. And it won't just be highways, it's also all the infrastructure needed for urban sprawl, like sewer and utilities, even broadband connections are listed in there. So this is really a recipe to develop some of these more pristine lands. I can't really think of a much worse bill than in my entire time in politics.
Weber and other environmental advocates worry about the impact the new toll roads will have on agricultural areas and wetlands, places the state has worked for decades to preserve and rehabilitate. Right now, there's no planned route for the roads, but the general idea is to expand Tampa's Suncoast Parkway to the Georgia border through Jefferson County, lengthen the Florida Turnpike west to connect to the Suncoast Parkway, and build the Heartland Parkway, which would run from Polk County down to Collier near Naples.
I think we can improve evacuation access to our rural communities, multi-purpose corridor access.
That's Senate President Bill Galvano announcing the plan earlier this year. At times, it appeared the proposal was going nowhere. It did not get a hearing in the House until the final weeks of the annual lawmaking session. The final version of the proposal is substantially different from where it began. It calls for local, state, and regional input to mitigate potential ecological damage. And in the early years of planning, it shifts state transportation dollars to more rural areas of the state so communities can invest in infrastructure. Speaking to public radio station WUSF in Tampa, Lieutenant Governor Jeanette Nunez recently said Governor Ron DeSantis was evaluating the measure.
I know that they had looked at it from a readiness standpoint with regards to hurricanes and the ability to really facilitate with folks that are trying to avoid a storm like what we saw in Irma. So I know that that's an issue that comes up from time to time. So he'll look at it from a wide variety of perspectives.
DeSantis had previously expressed his concerns about toll roads, but had noted the need to relieve congestion in South and Central Florida.
We really want to focus our transportation strategy on alleviating all the congestion in places like South Florida and Central Florida, which has really, really been bad. And then we want to embrace innovation.
He signed off on the bill Friday. Construction of the projects must begin no later than December 31st, 2022, and be open to traffic no later than December 31st, 2030. I'm Lynn Hatter.
Environmental advocates are questioning whether Florida lawmakers see climate change as an urgent issue. Kevin DeOrbe reports on a disappointing legislative outcome for those who were hoping this year's legislature would do more to address problems related to a changing environment.
This year, Florida lawmakers filed nearly 3,500 bills. Those pertaining to climate change, just 12. Environmental advocates like Jonathan Weber of Florida Conservation Voters point to the leadership in the legislature for the lack of climate change legislation.
There are efforts and there are legislators who care very much about climate change. The leadership in the House and Senate will not let the bills move that will do anything to reduce carbon emissions in Florida.
One of those lawmakers advocating for more climate change legislation is Representative Anna Eskamani. Her effort to address climate change was among the dozen issue-related bills that went nowhere. Eskamani's House Bill 1291 would have required the state to craft a plan to make Florida 100% based on renewable energy by 2050.
It's why the engagement of young people is so important on this work. It's why you have to have the public outcry, because unless my colleagues and leadership feel that pressure, they're never going to move on it.
The Orlando Democrat believes there's a lack of understanding among some of her colleagues when it comes to how legislation on switching to 100% renewable energy production would work.
It's a major tech conversation, too. And we're talking about some of the cutting edge solar, wind energy alongside electric vehicles, you know, all these conversations that for some of our lawmakers, they're not really attuned to. So it's up to people like me to educate my colleagues on these subjects so they can feel comfortable talking about it and then ideally support as well.
The first stop for Eskamani's bill was supposed to be the Energy and Utilities Committee. It's chaired by Ocala Republican Representative Charlie Stone. But Stone essentially killed Eskamani's bill by not giving it a hearing. He says legislation like hers is hard to make cost-effective for the consumer. The cost of operating renewable energy plants has been steadily coming down throughout the years. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, an impartial organization that collects and analyzes energy information, the operating costs of renewable plants, like solar and wind, were less than fossil fuel plants in 2017.
I say that the real issue is one of prioritization.
Senator Jose Javier Rodriguez sponsored 5 climate change-related bills lawmakers drew up this session. For the past 2 years, he's worn rain boots this session, with hashtag #ActOnClimateFlorida written across them. The Miami Democrat is frustrated with the lack of climate change action among his colleagues. Rodriguez says statements like Stone's reflect a common misconception among his leaders.
I think many of my colleagues in leadership are just intimidated by the problem. They think that there's a gigantic price tag associated with starting to talk about climate change.
Rodriguez says making investments that cut emissions and increase Florida's resiliency to a changing climate will not only help Florida environmentally, but economically as well.
We're being watched as a state. And the reality is, if we don't start showing that we're getting in front of this, that we have a plan, that we know what we're doing, the economy is going to respond in kind and it won't be friendly to us.
On the other side of the aisle, Spring Hill Republican Senator Wilton Simpson says his party isn't receiving enough credit for the things it's done to move the climate change conversation forward. Simpson chairs his chamber's Innovation, Industry, and Technology Committee, and he believes his colleagues have made strides towards encouraging cleaner energy.
So when I was first elected 7 years ago, one of the first bills I did was a natural gas rebate bill.
Simpson is talking about the state's natural gas rebate program. The law offers rebates for government or private entities who convert their trucks to natural gas from diesel. The Florida Natural Gas Association backed the bill, and Simpson went on to receive its Public Policy Champion Award after the bill's signing. Environmental advocates argue rebate programs like Simpson's barely scratch the surface when it comes to cutting down emissions. Still, Florida lawmakers are acknowledging climate change. That's a big change from a few years ago, when the term was unofficially banned from state environmental reports. Governor Ron DeSantis made it clear in his first 100 days in office he wants to make the environment a priority and has even appointed a new chief science officer. But the priority so far has been water quality and management. So for many climate change advocates, this recent legislative session marks another year Florida lawmakers pushed the issue to the side. I'm Kevin DeLorbe.
Still to come on Capitol Report, we'll speak with 3 Florida school superintendents about how they plan to handle the state's expansion of the Armed Guardian program.
We participated in the Guardian program this past year, this current year, and we're going to participate in it next year.
One of the nation's top election experts says, forget voter fraud, let's start worrying more about the security of the votes that are cast.
parties who want to are looking at getting every vote that they can are pushing the most insecure and the method which you're most likely to lose your vote.
Florida officials want to teach more people how to spot and stop human trafficking. They've set their sights on working with transportation companies like Uber, which has already had some success.
A driver reported a 16-year-old an incident where he felt he recognized the signs, he acted immediately, and he reported it.
And the Trump administration's tariffs threaten Florida blueberries. As the dust settles from this year's legislative session, school district superintendents are evaluating funding and new policies handed down from state lawmakers. Ryan Daly reports in North Florida, superintendents in three counties have different takes.
In conversations concerning public education in Florida, the state's teacher shortage is likely to come up. And talks among state lawmakers this session were no exception. That's why some legislative leaders have touted a roughly $75 per student increase in the base student allocation, part of the funding formula for public schools. That amounts to about $364 million in flexible funding, which they've been careful to point out can be used for teacher pay raises.
Last year, I would have the word would have been apprehensive moving into last year about this time, especially after we were given our budget last year. This year's budget, in comparison to last year, would give me a more hopeful outlook, definitely.
That's Wakulla County Superintendent Bobby Pierce. He's optimistic that a pay raise for teachers could come out of negotiations with the local teachers union this summer based on the injection of flexible funds. In Bay County, which took the brunt of historically destructive Hurricane Michael 7 months ago, the district is dealing with the opposite of a teacher shortage. Bill Husfeldt has been superintendent there for more than a decade.
Because we have lost so many students and teachers alike, we're not going to have a problem recruiting teachers. In fact, for the first time ever, we probably have more teachers than we need. So we have, last Friday notified 100 teachers that they don't have jobs right now next year.
Still, Husfeldt is encouraged by the hike in flexible funds.
I was very grateful for the increase in the base student allocation. That really is what makes the difference. That is where we're able to take funds to give raises and to try to do more than what we've actually been funded in the past.
Rocky Hanna is superintendent of Leon County Schools, home to the Capitol itself. He says even with the BSA increase, other factors make for an increase to Leon's budget that's less potent than advertised.
Don't be deceived by that $9.5 million, because in reality, once you take out best and brightest, the other categoricals, along with the increased contributions to FRS and healthcare, it's really about 3.2 or 3.3, mm-hmm. which is still better than nothing.
Modification to the Best and Brightest program was another project of the Republican-controlled legislature. The program gives bonuses to teachers and principals based on reaching certain performance benchmarks. Changes to the program also removed a barrier for qualifying that was based on teachers' past SAT and ACT scores. Hanna and Husfeldt have different takes on the updated bonus structure. At a recent school board meeting, Hanna pointed out what he feels is a hole in one piece of the formula.
The other piece, schools that show an increase over a three-year period of time of 3 points or more and who are deemed highly effective or effective shall be eligible to receive the bonus, right?
But Hanna says there's a catch.
A number of our schools that are A schools that, because their points are so are already so high, may not show that 3%, that 3-point growth over those years. So we'll have teachers potentially at A schools that are highly effective that will not receive a penny.
To Husfeldt, the Best and Brightest changes, particularly the provision concerning teachers' SAT and ACT scores, is a bright spot in the budget.
There was a huge increase in the Best and Brightest program, and there was some legal changes in the language of that, which we think it'll make it much better and more fair for teachers to be eligible for it. And I think that's one thing that's going to make a huge difference for a lot of individuals.
Governor Ron DeSantis signed the bill modifying Best and Brightest into law last week. I'm Ryan Daly.
state legislators agreed on making several changes to the state's election system to make sure all districts would have enough time to count vote-by-mail ballots. But as Blaise Ganey reports, the security of those ballots may be an unresolved issue.
During the 2018 election, claims of voter fraud, missed deadlines, and lawsuits caused what some might call a fiasco. That led to legislators making changes to avoid the same problems in the future. Most of the ideas came directly from the Florida State Association of Supervisor of Elections. Paul Lux is the president of the group.
I can tell you that we are responding to the need to improve things for the voters themselves, things that they may not be aware of that need to be improved.
Former Leon County Supervisor of Elections Ion Sancho thinks the change didn't do enough.
It's primarily window dressing. The biggest problem was the meltdown of Governor Scott, for example, who went crazy on election night over the Broward County votes that were mail-in votes that they had not had the time to clock in and count.
But Lux says changes they made this year fixes those issues.
The reason we moved the mailing date for the absentee ballots, for example, is because the U.S. Postal Service is now telling us with the closures of many of their regional processing facilities, most first-class mail requires a minimum for a guaranteed delivery of 5 days.
Another change extends the last date to request vote-by-mail ballots from 5 to 10 days before an election. Sancho says he's not convinced it will help.
That's designed, in theory, to prevent all of these tens of thousands of ballots arriving on the last day. Humans, I want to tell the legislature, are procrastinators. The 10,000 ballots didn't arrive on election day because they were requested 5 days before. They arrived on the election day because people waited until the last second to mail those things in.
Sancho says the best thing the bill does is extend the time period to count votes.
Did extend the time period that election officials had to tabulate these mail ballots. That will provide more time for the supervisor of elections to tabulate the large number of mail-in ballots, which they get slammed in at the last second.
Counties can now begin to count vote-by-mail ballots 22 days before an election. It was 15. Lux, who was also Okaloosa's county supervisor of elections, says the extension was needed.
You have those large counties like Palm Beach and Broward and Miami-Dade who get hundreds of thousands of absentee ballots. And they had the same 15 days to open them as the rest of us did. Some of the smaller counties, Levy, Lafayette, Madison, they certainly didn't need 15 days to open all of their vote-by-mail ballots. But Miami was really pushing the envelope to get it all done in those 15 days.
But even with the changes, Sancho says vote-by-mail ballots aren't a good way to vote. He says statistics show 3% of all vote-by-mail ballots go uncounted, often disenfranchising minorities and young voters more.
Because they're the most likely to create errors in this mail-in ballot. And if they create an error, that could, in fact, disenfranchise them from having that vote counted.
Governor Ron DeSantis has yet to sign the bill. As long as he doesn't veto it, it'll take effect July 1st. I'm Blaise Ganey.
After lawmakers passed a bill to crack down on human trafficking by requiring more training for people like hotel workers who might interact with victims, Florida's Statewide Council on Human Trafficking is looking for opportunities to teach more people how to spot the signs. Regan McCarthy has that story.
Plantation Democratic Senator Lauren Book says human trafficking is a major issue in the state of Florida.
And worst of all, our Florida Department of Health says that half of all of these victims are under the age of 18 years old. Human trafficking is now understood as the second largest criminal enterprise in the country, only behind drug trafficking.
Book sponsored the Senate version of the bill. It makes a number of changes, including ensuring law enforcement, hospital workers, and hotel workers get training to better identify and provide assistance for human trafficking victims. Book credits Savannah Parvue for many of the pieces of her legislation. Parvue was a victim of sex trafficking for years. She told lawmakers as the bill moved through committee that she spent much of the time she was trafficked living in a hotel.
I feel like if we had a bill like this when I was being trafficked in Central Florida beginning at 12 years old, I wouldn't have been trafficked as long as I was. I wouldn't have a lot of the trauma that I've had, a lot of the physical problems. I've had to have a hysterectomy and I'll never be able to have kids because of what was done to me. And I feel like if hotels were trained and had some kind of protocol to report human trafficking, then I wouldn't have been trafficked as long as I was.
During a recent meeting of the Statewide Council on Human Trafficking, Fort Myers Republican Representative Heather Fitzenhagen, who sponsored the House bill, said while she's happy with the progress lawmakers made, she'd like to see the training go even further.
The piece that didn't make it was school training. I thought it would be very valuable to have students become aware of some of the signs and protect themselves and others from people that might prey upon them. So that was one bill that didn't make it. And I would also like to see, hopefully in another legislative session, bar restaurants to be added, because that's a place that a lot of the recruiting goes on.
Attorney General Ashley Moody heads up the council. She says there could be another way to move Fitzenhagen's plan forward.
As I have always say, every issue doesn't necessarily always need a law if people are willing to take on these issues voluntarily. I know many in the hotel industry have already started training voluntarily their employees. I would just ask that the Department of Education look at that and determine whether that's something they might be able to do in an existing lesson plan already.
A Department of Education representative on the council has agreed to look into the issue. Meanwhile, Moody says another group the Human Trafficking Council is hoping to educate is drivers for transportation network companies. As the state prepares to host several major events, including the Super Bowl in Miami in 2020 and in Tampa in 2021, Moody says her office is already creating a partnership with Uber.
We are excited that they are willing to host training sessions in conjunction with this council and with my office to transportation providers and how to identify human trafficking and what to do when they make that identification.
Stephanie Smith is the senior public policy manager for Uber. She says in 2017, Uber began using its app to send drivers information about how to recognize the signs that someone could be a victim of human trafficking.
As we pushed that messaging out, a lot of national stories started to get attention of drivers reporting incidents. One was very gained a lot of attention out of California, where a driver reported a 16-year-old an incident where he felt he recognized the signs, he acted immediately, and he reported it. And law enforcement was able to come in, remove the child from the situation, get them in a safe place.
Smith says Uber plans to offer in-person training seminars in Florida in the run-up to the Super Bowl next year. I'm Regan McCarthy.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, the latest round of tariffs levied by the Trump administration is taking a toll on the nation's agriculture industry. In Florida, the tariffs threaten a trade deal that's been years in the making. As part of a series on Florida farmers, Sean Mulcahy reports on the state's blueberry industry and its struggle to stay afloat.
Bud Childs runs a 50-acre commercial and you-pick blueberry farm about 15 miles northeast of Tallahassee. He's the son of former Florida Governor Lawton Childs.
Meadowlark, and then this is Rebel on the left here. This is Georgia Dawn right here. And that's an early cultivar.
Childs began farming full-time about 10 years ago.
And all this was a stretch for a lot of reasons, but blueberries made sense. There were, University of Florida and University of Georgia, a lot of expertise, a lot of growers, great markets. So we embarked on it on a really pretty big way.
But an escalating trade war with China is casting a dark cloud over Florida's blueberry industry. Tariffs are taxes paid on imported goods. They're meant to bolster domestic industries. And in recent years, President Donald Trump has imposed billions of dollars in tariffs on Chinese goods, citing a national security risk. That's because the U.S. has what's called a trade deficit with China, meaning we import more goods than we export. And in Trump's eyes, that's not good. Here he is speaking at the State of the Union.
To build on our incredible economic success, one priority is paramount: reversing decades of calamitous trade policies, so bad. We are now making it clear to China that after years of targeting our industries and stealing our intellectual property, the theft of American jobs and wealth has come to an end.
But the U.S. levied tariffs have led China to impose retaliatory tariffs on American goods, and that's taken a toll on domestic industries, particularly farmers. And the tariffs threaten more than just individual farmers. They could derail a state trade deal with China that's been years in the making. In 2012, the Florida Agriculture Department started talks with China to export blueberries. Part of the process requires Chinese inspectors to verify quality. After 7 years of negotiations, that visit finally occurred last month, shortly after Trump imposed a new round of tariffs.
In the last 7 years, our department has spent a significant amount of time developing a relationship with China when it comes to blueberries.
That's Agriculture Commissioner Nikki Fried.
And so we feel like we were on the verge of some type of negotiation and agreement for exporting out our blueberries into China, and it concerns that with these tariffs and more to come, is really going to hinder that opportunity for our blueberry growers here in our state.
Fried says tariffs actually make American goods less competitive and lead to higher prices for American families. U.S. Democratic Representative Al Lawson sits on the House Agriculture Committee. He worries fallout from the tariffs could crush the Florida blueberry industry.
The president is really doing some damage to the industry. And I've told several members, which I talked to him today, I just don't see how you can continue to support him on these deals because you're destroying farmers. The Florida blueberry farmers.
Trump has given billions of dollars in aid to farmers to help ease the impact of tariffs. But back on Childs' blueberry farm, he says just giving out money doesn't solve the problem.
Well, those payments are, that's not what farmers want. People don't want a handout from the government. They just want a level playing field where they can compete. We just want to be able to compete.
He says the government needs to do more to protect local farmers.
I mean, these tariffs in the NAFTA agreement are really a poke in the eye to farmers all across the country.
These tariffs, though, are just the latest in a storm of problems for Florida's struggling agriculture industry. Cheaper foreign imports have forced local growers to cut seasons short or even to go out of business. I'm Sean Mulcahy.
You can hear part two of this series next week, where we'll discuss a problem that's plagued the state's farmers for years, the North American Free Trade Agreement, and damaging foreign imports. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Ryan Daly, Blaise Gainey, Lynn Hatter, Gina Jordan, Regan McCarthy, and Sean Mulcahy. Thanks also to Kevin Del Orbe. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Be sure to join us again next week at this time for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. For more information about Capitol Report and to hear previous episodes, visit WFSU.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following: The Able Trust, dedicated to connecting businesses and workers with disabilities. Businesses are encouraged to recruit, interview, and hire talented and loyal Floridians with disabilities as they seek to broaden their customer base and reach all of Florida's diverse population. AbleTrust.org.